pulling it hard, yanking her neck back and forcing her eyes up to the night sky. But she's still wearing that wig, and I'm afraid I'll tug it off and fuck everything up and destroy the perfection that is this moment. So instead, I slap her ass hard with the back of my left hand, and she squeals. I love it. It makes me even harder, if that's possible. And now I take the thumb of my left hand and stick it in her ass again. I'm fingering her clit, playing with her asshole, and driving myself back and forth inside her at the same time. Oh, Jesus, stop. No, don't stop. She contradicts herself, and I smile. I smile because she's moaning and panting and very nearly on the verge of coming all over my dick, but there's one thing she doesn't know. And that's that I'm not all the way inside her yet. I've been holding back just enough. Just far enough for her to feel almost all of me, but not quite. But now I'm ready to give her the whole thing. I accelerate the rubbing on her sweet pussy, and then in one hard thrust, I push myself inside her all the way, driving my thumb into her ass and manically rubbing on her clit, and she explodes. She screams so loudly that for a moment I believe she'll pierce through the pounding bass that's thudding from inside the club, sending the whole place racing out the back door to see what's going on. And I don't give a fuck. Let them see. Let everyone see. Let the whole fucking world know that right now, for just this one moment, I'm happy. I pause just for a second, long enough to ask, "So, did you come?" She turns her head over her left shoulder and sees me smiling. I slow everything down. I move my hand away from her clit. I take my other hand away from her ass. I stop thrusting inside her and am just joined with her. She shakes her head the tiniest bit like she can't believe. I'm not sure. I choose to think she shakes her head like she can't believe what a swell fucking guy I am. Then she just coughs out. "Fuck you." "No, you," I respond. I grab her hips and thighs with both hands and I start again. This time, not with any extra tricks or subtlety, just pure, raw, unrestrained fucking. Pounding myself into her from behind again and again and again and again. Forcing my whole self into her whole self. The grunting whine she makes with each push just drives me to try to push harder. "Oh God, oh my God," she pants. "I'm going to come again." "Do it," I say. "Do it. Come. Come all over me. Cover me with it. Fucking wash me in you." I don't know if it's just because I'm so good at fucking, or if it's because I said some shit that turned her on, or if it's the thrill and danger of this whole insane night, or probably all of the above. But she does. She comes again. She orgasms like I've never felt a woman orgasm before. Her walls clench around me like a vise. She practically chokes my shaft with her pussy and her legs shudder so hard that I'm sure if she falls now she'll drag me to the ground with her cock first. So I pull back and hold her up, resting deep inside her until she stops shaking and quivering. "Go. Fuck yourself," she whispers. "No way. This is better." She drops her chin to her shoulder so that I can see her profile grinning, and I almost shoot myself inside her right there. She must feel me holding it back somehow because she starts. "Will you?" She stops and bites her lip. Holy shit, she is going to be the end of me. I prompt her. "What? I mean, the answer is likely yes, but what?"
"Will you come on my ass? Please?"
Jesus Christ. The lip biting was nothing. It's the please that almost fucking kills me. "That's what you want?" I summon the presence of mind to ask. She nods her head in a way that conveys, yes, no, I'm not sure, but yes. And then I do something that I'm not expecting. Not even a little. I reach around her waist with both arms, wrapping her in a hug as I pull my chest down to the wings on her back, and I kiss her on the shoulder, right by where she has her head turned to see me. I feel a small exhalation of breath whisper past my nose as my lips touch her skin. And here, in this back alley behind a strip club, my pants around my ankles, her in heels, angel wings, and a ribbon of cloth now pushed below her breasts that constitutes what's left of her outfit, with the possibility that drunk, horny tourists or men with guns could walk up on us at any second. It feels like the sweetest, purest, kindest moment that I can remember having in my life maybe since I was a kid. And I have no idea why that's true. It just is. So I savor it. I savor this brief tick of the clock like it's already a memory that I can call on when I want to think back to a time when I was happy. And then I lift my chest up, draw my hips back, and begin pumping in and out of her again so that in a few seconds I can shoot my load all over her pretty ass.
He's so fucking deep that I can feel him in my stomach. And I've stopped caring about what this says about me or what it means that I'm fucking a guy whose name I don't know in a back alley. All I know is that I feel good and present and needed. And I didn't even know I needed to feel needed, but I do. I am important to this person. Right now, for whatever it's worth, I am somebody to somebody else.
Fuck, he grunts out. I'm gonna come.
Do it, I say. Do it. Come on me. Let it all out. On me. Now. He pulls out, and I order him once more, a little more forcefully. Do it. And suddenly I feel warmth landing on my ass and hips and the backs of my legs. Jesus, it just keeps coming and coming, spilling over my skin. I love it. I take a peek and see him fisting his cock, the last bits of his sticky hot cum pulsing out of the thick tip of his dick, and I can't fucking believe this. I come one more time. 3 times in like 10 minutes. Holy shit, who is this man who has forced his way into my life? And he has forced himself, because he is a force. I moan again as my legs shiver and shake, and he moans as he drains himself dry. Then, both of us empty and shaking, he lets out a breath and says,
"Thanks,"
which I find kind of amazingly adorable, and I'm not sure why. So, you're welcome, I say through a dumb smile I can't stop from spreading. He laughs and slaps me right on my ass, and then he says,
"Shit."
"What?" I ask. "What happened?"
"I got cum all over my hand." "Holy shit, did I do all that?"
I crane my head to see him staring at his handiwork, and the look on his face is one of wonder and maybe pride. Men. "Yep, you sure must have," I say as I turn around, take his cum-covered hand in mine, and place his fingers in my mouth.
"Jesus Christ,"
he says as I suck his salty semen from his strong fingers.
"You're going to fucking kill me."
I just smile in return, because who knows, maybe I will. Maybe we'll kill each other. And just then, the back door opens. Raven sticks her head out. He pushes me back, up against a wall, into the corner, lost in the shadows. She looks left, looks right. "Please, oh dear Lord, do not come out here to look around." "Scarlet," she calls out. He puts his head against mine and tries not to laugh. I want to punch him because I am definitely not laughing. Raven sees the abandoned Defender sitting in the middle of the alley, its light still on. She walks over to it to look inside, and we recess ourselves as deep into the dark as we can. I can feel the cum sliding down the backs of my thighs, and a thought occurs to me. This is fucking insane. "Scarlet," Raven calls out into the night. "Just go back inside, Raven. Please, just go back in." I close my eyes and pray to whoever might be listening to just have her turn around and head back in. Just please let me get away from this with my job intact. That's what I'm praying for. Not to preserve my dignity or my modesty or my integrity or decency or anything that ends in Y. I just don't want to lose my J-O-B. That's all I can think about, and suddenly, I feel ashamed. But whoever is out there listening to my plea decides to cut me a break, because Raven takes one last look around and heads back inside. It then occurs to me that she might have seen me run out back before, or someone may have, and that, coupled with an ominous-looking all-black Land Rover just idling in the alley, might just send up some alarm bells. So I need to get the hell back in there ASAP and make up some fucking excuse about where I've been. I put my hands on his chest and push him away. I gotta go. I bend down, grab up my tea bag, and start to step into it when I realize, shit, do you have anything I can clean myself up with? He says, looking around. Here. He pulls off his t-shirt and hands it to me, and I see the scars. Again. Oh, right. He said I don't want to know. Okay. I do a quick inventory of all the information I currently have about this dude. He walks around, looking like he's homeless but clearly has money to burn. He has scars all over his body that I don't want to know about. He fights men with guns like he doesn't care if he lives or dies. He may think I'm really an angel, which may make him a crazy person. He probably has an actual name, but I have no idea what it is. He fucks better than anyone I've ever met. I haven't been able to stop thinking about him. Assessment: this guy is bad news. I don't know what the hell I've been thinking or why I haven't been able to get him off my mind, but that shit stops right now. I grab the t-shirt from his hand and contort myself to try to wipe myself clean, which, at present, feels like it's gonna take a lot of scrubbing and a long, long time. Do you want some help? He reaches to give me a hand. I pull away. Nope, got it, thanks. I keep wiping. I just want to get the hell back inside. Back inside Pete's strip club, where life makes sense. I finish getting all of him off all of me, to the best of my ability, wipe my hands, throw the shirt back at him, pull my panties up, fix my top back over my tits, adjust my filthy fucking angel wings, and look him square in his eyes, which look confused, and maybe a little sad, like a kid who's just dropped his ice cream cone on the sidewalk, the way they did last weekend. And that annoys me a little bit because I lost that night, and now it's happening again. This isn't me. It's not. I don't do this shit. And I know things have been hard, but that's not why I'm doing it. That's not why I'm all of a sudden losing my shit. He's still looking at me like that. What? I demand.
Nothing.
He mumbles. Okay, well then, I gotta go. See ya. I pat him on the shoulder and head back in, because this has to end. Now. I cannot lose myself to this fucking sadness again. I can't. Because if I do, no one's gonna pick me back up. Not this guy, for sure. He's not gonna catch me when I stumble. He's not gonna give me a hand when I fall. He's just some random weirdo who stumbled into my life at just the wrong moment. But that's it. Random. There's no purpose to what we're doing other than survival. And I can't go into survival mode again. I refuse to climb Everest again. I won't do it. Because if I have to scale that rock wall one more time, I'll lose more than just my fingers. I'll lose every single part of me that's left.
Hey, he calls out.
Shit. Don't. Whatever it is, just don't. Just let me go. I sigh, turn back. Yeah, I say, still annoyed.
Do you have plans for Halloween?
And at that, any feeling of anything good that I have left drains immediately from inside me. There are a lot of reasons for that, but the biggest one is that I am reminded, with startling clarity, that the most essential reason to stay away from this guy is that he knows nothing about me. And I can see no scenario now where changing that relationship would be a positive move, because my life is being held together by the most fragile of adhesives, and that sheer will. And this, situation saps my strength. It tugs at my ability to hold it all together, and I am 100% sure that if I take it even the smallest step further, my world is likely to be blown completely apart by this other human being. Blown to smithereens. I don't know how I know that, but I do. So I let any light in my eyes dim itself out, and I stare straight through him and say, "Thanks again for the help. Take care." And then I open the door to the club, step inside, let the door close behind me, raise my chin up, and head off to give lap dances and make men think I'm in love with them.
Chapter 11. Tyler. Thanks again for the help. Thanks again for the help. Was she thanking me for the sex? Handling the guys chasing her? Both? Does it matter? She dismissed me. I can't blame her. I do that shit to women all the time. I wonder if it's because she knows that I'm going to burn her heaven down. She may sense that I'm bottled lightning. Of course she does. She's an angel. They're omnipotent, I think. Are they? They gotta be. They've got that great vantage point from up there in the clouds. I wonder if... Has the Klonopin helped at all? Oh, right. That's Dr. Eldridge talking. It's... some day of the week. I'm just not certain which. Or what happened since the other night. Which is something I'm getting used to. I only know I haven't stopped thinking about the alley and Scarlet, but other than that... shit. I mean, I literally couldn't say how I got here today. But I am. Here. I'm sitting in front of the doc in her gorgeous office that somehow manages to always feel sunny. I've been to some other places, you know, the ones where some dipshit shrink gets together with a bunch of other dipshit shrinks and they all buddy up to share a space, everyone with their own little room. Blech. Dr. Eldridge don't play that shit. She bought a house. An entire house just to see patients like me. The fucked up and rich kind. I still can't wrap my head around the fact that I'm rich, but I am, so fuck it. I'll see a fancy shrink in a fancy shrink house. I do know that I've blown off my last couple appointments with her, but decided to keep this one because... I'm not sure. A bunch of reasons, I suppose. Because I can't stop thinking about Scarlet, even though I'm not going to talk about Scarlet and what happened in the alley with the gun and the fight and the fucking. Because Halloween is this weekend and Scotty died on Halloween. Even though I'm not going to talk about Scotty and how even though Evan says it isn't, it still feels like it's my fault. Because I'm really, really fucking lonely and feel like I'll always be that way. Even though I'm definitely not going to talk about that. But I guess mostly I'm here now because Dr. Eldridge is nice, and I feel like I owe it to her to show up every now and again so she'll feel like she's helping me. Kind of the same way I wanted to give the doctors in the hospital what I felt like they needed when they showed me my scars. I don't know what it is with me and wanting doctors to feel okay about themselves. Maybe it's because med school is expensive and they should all think the money they spent was worth something. Who knows? But if I'm being honest with myself, and fuck it, why not be, there's another reason I decided to come today. It's because Dr. Eldridge is what I imagine my mom would be like if she had lived. Well, lived longer. She did live for a while, long enough to have me, after all. And on that level, I guess I'm kind of glad my mom isn't alive and I'm talking with Dr. Eldridge instead. Shit, that's not right. That isn't what I mean to say. Fuck. I'm not glad my mom is dead. That's a stupid fucking thing to say. But I didn't say it. I'm just kind of thinking all this. So why am I apologizing? And to who? The universe? I don't know. Point is, simply, that I'm grateful my mom doesn't have to see the fucking basket case her son has become. But then I suppose there's a real possibility I wouldn't be the way I am now and things wouldn't be like they are if she hadn't died when I was a kid. Hard to say. Nature, nurture, and all that. Maybe I'd be this fucked up weirdo no matter what. She used to call me her favorite son. I was, of course, her only son, so we both knew she was making a joke, and I appreciated that. I appreciated that even as like a 5-year-old, my mom didn't treat me all precious and shit. She just treated me like a regular person who just happened to be shorter than she was. I know I got my sense of humor from my mom. She was also the smartest person I ever met. And even though I was 13 when she died, 13 years with somebody is enough to get to know whether or not they're smart and cool and irreplaceable. God knows what the fuck she saw in my dad. I think it's possible that maybe he wasn't the way he is with everybody else when it was just the two of them. I think maybe she was the magic panacea that temporarily remedied his chronic assholeificaciousness. Not a clinical term, but the right one. And when she died, there was no counterweight anymore to keep him from turning into what he turned into. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is, I'm pretty sure I kept this appointment with Dr. Eldridge because I could really use a mom right now.
Tyler?
Dr. Eldridge interrupts my mental ramble. Again.
Sorry, what?
I'm sitting in my shrink's office thinking a bunch of stuff that I'm paying her to talk about, but then not actually talking about aloud. Maybe I should talk with someone about that.
The Klonopin. Has it helped your anxiety at all?
I think so. I'm not sure. I took some with a bunch of booze last week and may have punched a hole in my wall, but on the flip side, if I did, I don't remember it, so I don't feel anxious about having done it, so that's good, I suppose. She does this half-smile, half-frown thing that is accompanied by a sigh. I get it. I exhaust me, too.
Have you been getting out more, like we talked about? Seeing people at all?
I don't know. Kind of, I say. I'm sort of seeing a girl, I think.
What the fuck? I just told myself like 2 seconds ago that I wasn't going to talk about Scarlet. Jesus! How'd you two meet?
She asks sweetly. Hell, I gotta lie, right? Strip club, she's a stripper, at Pete's. That's where she strips, Pete's strip club. You know it, it's just off the strip. Okay, that was an absurd sentence, but it seems I have no control over my mouth, so to hell with it, let's see where this goes. She smiles and laughs a little.
No, I don't know it.
So you met her there? At the strip club? Where she strips? She smiles wider. God damn, she reminds me of my mom. Yeah, I say, unable to keep from smiling myself.
Okay, well, that's terrific, she says.
And that's it. That's all she says. No prying, no cajoling, no judgment. She just lets it sit there. I've been made to see a few therapists over the years, and Dr. Eldridge is, no question, the fucking tits at this job.
So, what else?
She asks. Which is genius, because now she knows I know she's not going to try to manipulate me and shit, which means that she's created a safe space for me to say more and figures that I'm ready to open up. Sometimes I'm too smart for my own good, I'm afraid. Because since I know that's what she's doing, there's no fucking way I'm going to fall for it. The anniversary of my best friend Scotty's death is this weekend.
Oh, come on, Tyler!
Okay. You want to talk about that at all?
Her brow is furrowed almost imperceptibly.
Shit, I don't know.
No, I do know. Hell with it. Dam's open, so I say.
I guess, sure, okay.
She nods and waits politely while I decide how to begin.
Fuck, I don't...
Me and Evan, you know Evan. She nods. Me and Evan and Scotty were best friends since, like, kindergarten. And you know how kids will become close and then, you know, like, get fickle or whatever and stop being friends? She nods again. We didn't. We just stayed best friends all through elementary school, middle school, high school. We were brothers. None of us had brothers, and we wanted them, I guess, so we became them for each other. I pause to consider what parts of the story are important. We only have 50 minutes together, and some of that time is gone, so I decide just to cut to the chase. But so, after high school, Evan joined the fire department because that's what he had always wanted to do since we were kids. And by the way, Evan had like a 4.0 GPA. Could have gone to Stanford or an Ivy or something, but the guy just really, really wanted to be a firefighter. That part isn't actually important to the story, but it is important to distinguish Evan's trajectory from my own. I barely finished high school, and it would be easy to think that Evan's a fucking washout like me and had limited options, but he isn't, and he didn't. He's just an honestly noble motherfucker. Or father fucker, as is a more accurate designation. No disrespect intended, that'd be one lucky father. Anyway. But I needed to get the hell away from here, so I joined the Navy, right? I paused to make sure the doc is still with me.
Right, yes.
She is. Yeah, right, so Scotty... See, Scotty always... Well, he always kind of looked up to me and Evan, I guess. I don't know. I mean, we were the same age, but he was always a little smaller and a little more boyish and just, like, super eager to, whatever, to prove himself, you know? She nods again. And I suddenly realize that I haven't talked about Scotty in kind of a long time. It feels good and terrible all at once. And like I said, we were best friends, and I think he saw Evan becoming a fireman and me becoming a bomb tech and whatever, and look, Scotty never really wanted to do that kind of thing. Like, he was fascinated by it, fire and explosives and stuff, I mean, but I think he really kind of wanted to figure out why things burned, or why things blew up, or why this chemical interacted with that chemical or whatever. Like, the dude should have been a scientist or physicist or something, but... Holy shit. I realize that I haven't, in fact, talked about this next part to anyone. Ever.
Yes. But what?
She has this warmth in her eyes that just fucking sucks me in. But... I gave him shit about it. Like, all the time. I just, like, constantly gave him a hard time about the fact that he was going to spend his life in a lab or a classroom or wherever instead of out there doing shit like I was going to, like Evan was going to. And I told him shit like... I take a long breath thinking about what an unconscionable cocksucker I can be. Dr. Eldridge waits patiently. Just shit like... Not everyone can be a hero. Some people have to carry the hero's jock, blah, 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 whatever. Just dumbass fraternity talk and shit like that.
Okay, she says.
Still no judgment, which is making this harder, because I don't even have the choice to be defensive. And Evan used to tell me to ease up on him, but I thought that I was just doing what brothers do to each other, giving each other a hard time.
I'm sure you were, she says.
Yeah, but... Fuck. But I wasn't. Or, shit, I was. I mean, that's what I was trying to do, trying to be, but, like, I didn't know how, if that makes sense. So, basically, I think I was just channeling my fucking dad. Just saying the kind of mean-spirited, putting somebody else down bullshit that he does. You know, being a fucking prick. Dr. Eldridge nods her head. Takes a calming breath, and then asks,
"So how did Scotty die?"
Fuck. Yeah, right. So I'm in the middle of my second deployment, or I think it may have been my third? Shit, I don't know anymore, it doesn't matter. I was gone, and I get an email from Scotty that he's moving to Colorado for firefighter training. What? Firefighter training? Colorado? What the fuck? And why Colorado? I ask him. He tells me, do you know what hot shots are?
Hot shots? Like,
they're firefighters, I interrupt. Specially trained firefighters who work in what's called wildfire suppression tactics. In other words, when there's a fire raging out of control because some fucknut forgot to put out their campfire or dropped a cigarette in the forest, these dudes are the crews trained to put that shit out.
And so Scotty was going to Colorado to become a hotshot.
You got it. I think she expects me to say more, but I don't. I'm starting to feel like maybe I'm all talked out. But then I get a second wind. So yeah, so he's moving to fucking Colorado to become a fucking hotshot. Oh, and by the way, don't think the fact that they're called hotshots is lost on me. Only thing that would be more on the nose is if they were called big dick badasses who'll show fucking Tyler Morgan who's the man. I think they actually tried that for a while, but it didn't fit on the back of the jackets. I pause for a beat to give the good doctor a moment to take in just how goddamn clever I am. She grins tightly. It makes her eyes squint.
So, anyway. So, you know. You know me. I can't just let anything be without being a smartass or making some fucking joke, because then I might risk actually having a genuine emotion, and that doesn't sound fun. So know what I did? No, seriously, know what I did? Guess. She continues to just eyeball me with compassion and a lack of judgment, and it's tearing me completely in half. No? Okay, I'll tell you. I gave him shit about it. I gave him shit about, were they only gonna let him put out fires in flower gardens, and would the helmet fit his tiny head and shit. And his head wasn't even that tiny. He had a totally normal-sized head. It was a stupid joke. Fuck. I'm starting to get a little emotional now. I'm worried it's going to freak her out. And what happened? She asks calmly. What do you mean? I say. He told me to go fuck myself.
Sure, she says. But I mean, what happened that caused him to die? You don't have to talk about it if you don't want.
No, I do. I mean, I don't, but... I take a deep breath, sigh it out. So he's up in Colorado, and it's Halloween, and look, I don't know all the details. Obviously, I wasn't there, but as I understand it, some goddamn kids, they think, are out in the woods getting high and shit, and they start a fire somehow, and it gets out of control real fucking fast because it was like a weirdly dry October or whatever, and Scotty's crew is the first deployed to try to contain it, and it's very clear. I don't need to say more, but I've come this far. And one of the other hotshots was standing in the way of some falling timber or something, and Scotty pushed him out of the way, and the tree fell on him instead, and he fucking died, and it was Halloween, and Evan says it's not my fault, but it is pretty much my fault, because he was trying to be a hero, and I know for a fact that he was trying to be a fucking goddamn motherfucking hero because of all the fucking years that I gave him shit, so fuck me, and fuck Halloween, and fuck God, and fuck everybody, and Scotty's dead, the end.
Silence can have wait. And the silence in the small room after my big outburst is intensely heavy. I swear too much, don't I? I ask after a few thick moments pass. As compared to who? She responds. Bless her heart. Then she commences again. Do you mind if I say a couple of things, or do you have more?
I shake my head no, I don't want to say more. If possible, I'd like to unsay everything I just said.
So, you don't need me to tell you this, but Evan is right. Your friend's death is not your fault. That's the first thing.
She bends her head down to seek my eyes because my gaze is now pointed directly at the floor.
Also, she continues, I know you've been diagnosed with PTSD. You got that from a military psychiatrist, yes?
I nod, slightly.
Okay, she says. I'm gonna go ahead and say that I do agree with that, but I'm gonna add something. I think you've probably been living with it since long before you were in the military.
Well, that gets my attention. I look up. She finds my eyes.
I think you've been battling post-traumatic stress since you were a child. Because I think you've been dealing with trauma since you were a child.
I bite my bottom lip a little.
Isn't 50 minutes up yet? And,
nope, still some time to go.
And I think you might look for reasons or situations that help keep you in a state of trauma. Not because you want to, but because it's familiar. Because you need to have something to fight against.
I feel like punching something right now, that's for sure. I feel like walking out of here, finding the first drunk group of frat boys I can find, all giving each other shit and joking with each other in careless and hurtful ways, and ripping off their arms and beating them to death with them. Not to teach them a lesson, just because it'd feel good.
But hey, just my opinion. I have 3 degrees and have seen hundreds of patients, but let's be honest, nobody really knows what's going on inside anybody else. Maybe you're fine and it's the rest of the world that has PTSD. Could go either way.
She smiles again.
It doesn't make me want to punch things any less, but it definitely makes me not want to punch her.
Do you have any plans for Halloween? She asks. Are you seeing the girl?
Fuck, no. I wanted to ask her to a carnival at the firehouse that they do for charity, but I didn't get a chance.
Why don't you call her and ask her? I think it would be good to start replacing this particular association you have with one that's more positive.
I can't call her, I say. I don't have her number, or her name, or like a real clear understanding that she's an actual human being and not just a fantasy that I created. Now it's the doctor's turn to bite her lip.
Well, she says, that feels like it's worth talking about, but we're out of time.
Oh, I say. Just a few minutes ago, I was praying for this to be over. And now that it is, I'm kind of sad, which is surprising. Or else it's not at all. She reads my face. It's not hard to see, I imagine.
Or, she starts, I don't actually have anyone right away. If you want to talk some more, we can.
She tilts her head. It occurs to me all of a sudden that I'm paying her. That talk some more means pay her for more of her time. And that on some level this is what my relationship with Scarlett is about too. Paying for the illusion of something I want. Something I need. In Scarlett's case, it was about paying her for the illusion of desire. No, not desire. Salvation. I was trying to buy salvation. Right here, with the doctor, it's about paying for the illusion of what it would be like to have someone who gets me, who understands me, who cares at all. Paying for a surrogate mother. And realizing this is just about the most sorrowful, most desperate thing I can imagine, so...
Tyler, she asks, would you like to talk some more?
Yeah, I say. I would.
Chapter 12. Maddie. My mother calls on Monday. I let it go to voicemail, and then I stare at that little voicemail notification all day, telling myself I should just delete it and not listen. But she's just trying to be helpful, and so it sits there like just another little red flag in my life. I'm still trying to come to terms with last weekend at Pete's. Not only the way Logan practically kidnapped me from the alley, or the way Ford kicked his friend's ass and took his gun, but also what came afterward. I've been trying to forget about it, but I can't. It was... hot. God, I'm so disgusting. But I can't deny it. This guy, whatever his real name is, just does something to me. Makes me irrational. Turns me into a dirty little slut. I know he's bad for me. I see all the ways this can go wrong. And I know I'm just as bad for him. I mean, shit. All I gotta do is look at the fucking calendar to understand why I'm acting this way. I press the voicemail icon on my phone just as an excuse to stop thinking about him and wince as my mother's voice blares through the speaker. Madison, she says in her calm mom voice, I have something really important to ask you. Can you please call me back? Thank you, darling. The call ends. My life ends, too, as I get lost in the reasons she's so insistent on talking to me this week. But only for an instant. Because I decide I'd rather think about Madison's slutty adventures at Pete's than that. So I masturbate to the memory of what he did, the way he felt, the way he made me feel. My back is scratched from being fucked up against the brick wall, and there's a bruise on my left thigh from where his fingers pressed into my muscles as he ate me out. I lie in bed and close my eyes and pretend we know each other. That it was a prearranged fantasy date. I was just pretending to be a stripper. He was just pretending to be a stranger. That he's the love of my life, and this is just our special way of keeping things fresh. I come to that thought. Annie doesn't come home Monday night, and even though Caroline and Diane tell me not to worry, she's just on a job, I stay up until dawn waiting on her and get no sleep. She walks in on Tuesday afternoon looking like, well, a whore who's been on call for 18 hours. "Don't ask," she says, dropping her heels on the foyer floor. So I don't, because I'm wallowing in my own mountain of self-pity right now and don't even have time for hers. My father calls on Wednesday. He's not a message leaver, so he just calls and calls and calls all day long. Sometimes I wish I worked during the week. Pete's is open all the time, so I could work during the week. But it's slow, so was it worth it? I mean, if Pete's becomes my full-time job, what does that say about me? I'm desperate? Yes, that's exactly what it says. Wednesday night, I break down and answer my father's call. Hey, Dad, what's up?
We've been calling you all week, Mads.
I roll my eyes at the nickname. Please don't call me that.
How are you?
He asks, ignoring my response. I can hear my mother talking in the background, and then my father covers his phone with his hand or something, because her voice gets all muffled and distorted. Fine, I say automatically. My mother grabs the phone from my dad. Madison, she says, I'd like you to come visit for the holidays. What do you say? Can I send you a ticket? I'll get you global first class. She sings that last part, like it's a special treat. It is. I don't go anywhere these days. And even when I did, I never went first class. They have beds in that class, Madison, and they serve you champagne as soon as you sit down. It's lovely. Come stay with us for a little while. We miss you. Let me buy you a ticket. No, I say. I can't, Mom. Really. I'm so busy with this new business, I just can't leave it right now. If I do, I'll lose all the momentum I've built up over the last few months. Bullshit. I cannot believe how stupid I am for wasting $12,000 on a fucking drone.
You would have been better off buying stripper outfits with that money, my little devil says.
Or paying Carlos back, the angel counters. Did you at least call Plu?
Who?
Dr. Brown.
Oh, her,
I say, unable to hide my disgust. Plumeria Brown is the daughter of my dad's old associate from his Vegas casino days. I knew her, sorta, all growing up. She's only a few years older, but the fact that she's now some kind of licensed therapist is just a big ol' slap in my face as far as I'm concerned. I think you'd really enjoy catching up with her.
Would I?
I laugh. Why do you think that? Well, my mother says, the two of you are close in age. You must have a few things in common. I think she'd be a good listener.
You don't talk to people you know when you see a therapist, mother.
I snarl out the word mother. It kinda defeats the purpose. Well, she definitely understands the issues.
No one understands the issues, I snap back. And I'm tired of you pushing this shit on me. Can you just stop, please? Just let me deal with it the way I always do. I've gotten through enough anniversaries now, and those cards you send, they don't help. So just stop.
Silence on the other end of the phone. I exhale. Mom, she inhales. Okay, Maddie, if that's what you think is best, then I'll stop caring, okay? How's that? I'll just throw up my hands and stop caring. Is that what you want? Do you want us to forget about you? Pretend we don't have a daughter? I feel the water welling up in my eyes, swallow hard, then say, I'm just not ready. It's been 7 years, Madison. You are ready. The tears fall down my cheeks, but I don't cry, not sobs anyway. You need to get out, meet people, move on, Maddie. I have, I say. No, my mother counters. You start things and never finish them, jumping from one crazy plan to another like you're desperate to fill up your life. You hide in your work, pretending to be busy. I am busy, I say. And you don't date. I am dating, I say, just wanting to stop her pity. You are? My mother says. The surprise in her voice makes me stifle a laugh. What's his... Is it a him? Then I do laugh. Yes, it's a him. What's his name? Ford, I say, picturing the face that goes with that fake name. Ford. What's his last name? Shit. Chevy, I say, because that other car name flies right out of my head and I'm desperate to pull this off. My mother tisks her tongue. You don't need to lie to me, Maddie. Okay, I don't know his last name, I say exasperated, but he really is called Ford, and I've only seen him a couple of times, which isn't a lie either, so I didn't want to tell you, but you seem to think I'm some spinster hiding away in the attic just waiting to grow old, and I'm not. I'm living, Mom. I'm fine. Everything is fine. She thinks about this for several long, silent seconds, probably trying to picture my life. If she knew I was stripping at Pete's, she'd hang up the phone and fly home immediately, so I know that's not what she's picturing. She's picturing some average guy, probably. Maybe tall, maybe dark hair, maybe that Ford guy, in fact. He's kind of my type, all manly and shit. I always did go for that type. So I just fill it in for her. I tell her what he looks like, his handsome face and his beard, which makes me actually smile when I say it out loud. And I tell her about his scars. I'm not sure why, maybe to divert her sympathy from me to him. He was a soldier? She asks. Yes, I say, assuming, since he said I didn't want to know, and I never got confirmation. But I have a feeling. Not sure why it matters, since it's all just part of a lie, but it does for some reason. Is he normal? She asks. What does that just... You know, those soldiers sometimes come back with... damage. Okay, this is over now, I say. My tears are gone, and I'm fed up and tired. Will you call Plu? My mother asks. I hesitate. I'm not calling Plu. Please, Madison, my mother begs. Please. For me, just one time, one talk, that's all I'm asking for. And you'll leave me alone? I ask. I promise. If you go for one visit with Plu, I'll stop nagging about it. Fine, I sigh into the phone. I'll call her. I've already set up an appointment. It's for tomorrow at noon. Jesus, Mom, one time, Maddie. Then you're free of my worry. I've done my best, and I'll move on, too. I give up. Fuck it. One time, I say. That's it. And you never bring it up again. You never send another sympathy card to prepare me for the anniversary. You never call me about it. And you don't make Dad call, either. Because I don't need help, okay? I'm fine. My pride might very well be the thing that kills me. You've got yourself a deal, Madison, my mother says. Good, I say. I love you, she says, a soft whisper. I love you too, I sigh back, meaning it. And we all miss him, but he's gone. The tears are back. They fall and fall and fall down my cheeks in rivers that might never end. Goodbye, I say, then end the call and throw myself on the bed face first so I can cry into my pillow. You can call me Plu, or you can call me Dr. Brown. I'm in Plumeria's office at noon the following day, just like I promised my mother I would be. It's funny, right? I say, looking around her office. It's nice. She's in some kind of co-op with other counselors. Like roommates, I think. They all share a main reception area filled with high-end leather chairs and coffee tables with stacks of current glossy magazines. I'm in her private space, facing a window that's got a nice view of the mountains, and a whole parking lot filled with mature palm trees that blow in the desert wind. What's funny? Plu asks. Your name, you know? You used to be Plumeria, so exotic and shit. But now you're Dr. Brown, which is about as boring as it gets. Plu smiles at me, then writes something down on her pad of paper. She's fucking gorgeous, always has been. Long dark hair, almost black. Olive-colored skin with large hazel eyes. She looks like some kind of desert princess, and the view outside her office makes me think of an oasis. Which is good, right? That's what you want to think of when you come see a therapist. I know your mother made the appointment. Plu continues with a new, more businessy line of questioning. And I don't usually allow this, but since we're old friends, I made an exception. So tell me, Madison, what do you want to talk about today? I sigh. I want to scream at her that I don't want to talk about anything, but I'm the one who came, and she took the appointment. It's not her fault I'm here. It's mine. Your brother? She prods. I don't meet her gaze. Just continue staring out at the oasis, pretending I'm the desert princess, not her. It's been 7 years now, right? I nod. And it's still hard for you? I nod again. I know you were close. She continues, and then she laughs so abruptly it startles me. Remember that time when he got drunk at your parents' anniversary party? She asks, tilting her head a little like she's trying to recall every detail, but it's eluding her. I nod again. It seems to be the only response I'm capable of. He was so funny the way he did all those old dances with you that night. God, I miss him. My throat is tight. It feels like there's a boulder stuck in there and I can't swallow. But I think my favorite memory of him was in 9th grade when he got stuck up in that tree, trying to save that nest of baby birds. Do you remember that? You were, what, 8, 9? Jesus, this woman is bad at her job. He had a kind heart, didn't he? Plumeria goes on. He did. I force myself to speak, even though my throat feels like it might close up. He always raised the most money no matter what the fundraiser was for. Foster kids, feeding the homeless, toys for tots. Yep, he was the best, I say, forbidding myself to cry. And then he was gone, Plumeria says. She looks at me, and her smile fades. It's hard when people die young, Madison. It's not hard for him, because he's gone, but it's hard for you, and all the people he left behind, right? I just stare at her for a few seconds. How the fuck she ever got a license to do this is beyond me. I'm not here to talk about him. Good, she says. Let's talk about you. What are you doing these days? I sigh, shrug, so I can pull myself together. Just keeping busy, I guess. Do you work? She asks. I laugh. If perfect Plumeria Brown thinks I'm gonna open up to her about my current situation, she needs to take a few more psych classes. Well, what do you do? I run a business, I say. I do aerial photography for real estate agents. Oh, how interesting. Tell me about that. Well, it's new. I just started it. Okay, she says. So what did you do after college? You finished, right? Yes, I say with more venom than I should. Majored in business, and I've had lots of businesses since then. What kind? She asks. Well, I sigh, not sure I really want to admit all my failures, but I'm looking at the clock, which says I have 20 more minutes left of this nightmare. So I either come up with shit to say or make a scene walking out. So I start telling her. It's safe, anyway. No feelings at all attached to those failed ventures. Plu just nods and smiles, like she approves of what I've been doing. And when I'm done, she just sits there, still fucking smiling. That's all of them, I say. She looks down at her pad of paper and writes something down. I crane my neck a little to see what it is, but she's got her pad tilted up so I can't see. When she brings her attention back to me, she says, "Why do you think you have trouble committing?" I laugh. I never said I have trouble committing. I don't even know where you got that idea. She taps her pen to her pad 5 times, like she made bullet points on there, listing all my failures, and she's enunciating each one. You seem to have lost an awful lot, Madison. Look, the wedding business was going well until Carlos's stupid daughter got pregnant with another man's child. That's not my fault. And the pet bakery was great for a while, but it was just a trend, okay? I didn't realize it had no staying power. People make mistakes. So I've made some mistakes, but I'm only 25 fucking years old. Stop judging me. I'm not judging you, Madison. I'm just thinking you've let yourself lose a lot. Let myself? Jesus fucking Christ. I don't go into these things wanting to fail, for fuck's sake. Of course not, Plu says. You want to win. Everyone wants to win. You just don't seem to be able to get the job done for some reason. It's my job to help you figure out why. I know why, I say. Why? She asks. And this suddenly feels like a trick. Like she's been letting me blab on about business, but now she's back here, to the place I don't want to be. A little timer goes off.